It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Good morning, Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska, and who's on the line?
How you doing, Mike?
Well, thank you, citizen lobbyist, for calling in today for this special edition of, actually, Valley Edition. So what we're going to do is cover three things. One, take a look at Tuesday's Palmer City Council meeting where a budget was approved for next year. Secondly, we're going to look at the Borough Assembly meeting also on Tuesday. And lastly, we're going to look at the results, the final, so seemingly final results of using ranked choice voting here to determine who goes to Congress and who goes to the legislature. So you ready for all that?
A lot going on in a short week. Where do you want to start, Mike?
Well, let me just do the Palmer City Council, because in some respects that's perhaps the easiest. It was a relatively short but very powerful meeting. All the members were there. And what happened was the focus was on particularly public hearings, which were the second public hearings involving a whole set of resolutions that, when wrapped together, gave you the budget for 2023. Just a reminder to listeners that, unlike the Borough Assembly and the school district and the state of Alaska, the city of Palmer has to do its budget by the middle of December. And so, yeah, they did it. They went through each one of those resolutions, did a few discussion points that each one had been discussed before. And by the end of the meeting, they had approved essentially the budget. And they will have one more meeting before finishing up this year. It'll be on the 13th of December. But by all that we can see, it's likely to be a very, very short meeting.
I couldn't be two places at once, Mike. Luckily, there were two of us because you were at that meeting. I was at the borough, but I did get to listen to about half of it this morning.
Okay.
On our YouTube channel. So I got about halfway through it, and I was pretty impressed with some of the questions.
Oh, yes.
And I think this council is being very thoughtful about it. We'll see what the final outcome is, but shout out to Councilwoman Angelotti, who is, fairly new on the council. It's her first big budget, and I think she asked some good questions for herself. And also, there were some pretty good questions about a wage study that it looks like they may fund to have done and see where they are and their competitiveness with other areas. So I think they're doing some good work this year.
Yes, I agree with that. I wanted to make sure that we paid attention to something that happened early in the meeting. That was a proclamation recognizing the Colony Knights 2022 football team. For a short time, the entire room was filled with the football team. probably over 30 people, plus their parents and coaches and so on. And it was a proclamation because the Colony Knights football team did extremely well this year, and they were there to be appreciated.
Oh, I love that they showed up in person to do that. That means more to kids than I think people realize, is to be that little bit of accolade from their city. So bravo on that.
Now, there were some other action memoranda that were taken care of, and the one that I'd like to take care of before we move on to all the other things we're talking about is action memorandum number 22-054, which was authorizing a utility connection for Quantum Laundry Lounge. That one had received attention when it first appeared because of a concern that the potential was existing for perhaps some medically related items to be washed, and there was concern about what would happen with our processing system. The end result was the authorization was approved, but it was not unanimous. It was 5-2. And members Tudor and Alcantara said no. So, but the concern was somewhat alleviated by the point being made by both the attorney and others that very specific contract, and if they violated the terms of the contract, they could certainly have a change to their ability to connect to our system.
Yeah, and I think that had consulted the city attorney about that, so I think they had her on board, so that's a good place to start.
Okay. Any other, since you have had a chance to look a little bit at what was happening at that meeting, is there anything else you'd like to point out before? Okay, let's move on then.
I'll finish off the end of it, but what I heard was pretty good. And, you know, I think about the budget a lot. There's this quote from a pretty famous planner from Canada who says, "The truth about a city's aspirations isn't found in its vision, it's found in its budget." So we'll see when it's all put together what their aspirations and their budget looks like.
Okay. Well, moving on over then to the big white building in the Borough Assembly. Mm. You were there. What happened?
Well, there were two meetings, Mike. One was at 5 o'clock to certify the election. They, of course, have already gone through their canvassing in a long 2 weeks. It sounds like pretty hard work for them. But at the end of the day, they did finish and had a report from the canvass board. I guess to start out, Ms. Nowers was calling in. She's out of state. She's rarely gone, but she was calling in for it. Mr. Tews was a little late, but showed up. And as usual, Mr. Bernier was calling in as well on the phone. There wasn't any audience participation, so they launched right into it. The borough had a 40.8% turnout. So that's pretty good news, I guess.
At that election, right, yeah.
All right. And it was at the same time the state was. 38 of 40 precincts were open. So there were a lot of people motivated to get out, of course. I tell you, I don't think that I've really ever heard a canvas report like this one. There were a lot of little idiosyncrasies going on to report. Just some of it was regarding having two elections going in the same place. There were, you know, a lot of reconciliation they had to do. It sounded like the canvas board did their work. They worked really hard, two straight weekends through. It was, you know, two countings, one machine count, one hand count, nothing significantly different between the two. For those that are wondering, there was the same outcome from both. They didn't take up that question of where they go from here. But anyway, they did certify it. They had the oath of office for Mr. Hale, who was reelected for his final term. And Ms. Nowers will take her oath of office when she comes back. So that was kind of the gist of that whole meeting, Mike.
Okay.
The regular assembly meeting, the real significant piece, and you probably know more about this than I do, actually, Mike, and I sent you the handout. I thought was an interesting presentation given by the AEA, or the State Electric Energy Office, having to do with charging stations
right
around the state. You're very keen on that.
Well,
what's your takeaway from that?
You didn't hear the presentation, but you saw the... Yeah, I reviewed the materials that had been presented, and I've been in some contact with people that have been associated with the Alaska Energy Plan. This is the State of Alaska Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Implementation Plan. And the most interesting thing about it is it was just recently that approval was given to the plan submitted by the state that would allow the use of considerable monies, some millions of dollars, to work out and funding and build out an alternative fuel corridor. Mm-hmm. This corridor, I direct people to certainly the Matsu Borough's webpage and the materials associated with this meeting, because the maps are interesting. The maps begin in particular in Anchorage and go to Fairbanks. And along the way, they're pointed out the variety of charging stations for EVs along that whole path. But there are also the other path coming up from Homer or Seward, and even going from Palmer to Glen Ellen and beyond. And I'm beginning to think that this is somewhat like a mini version of where the railroad goes. In other words, back in the day when railroads were being built, a community would benefit from having a railroad pass through. And what I'm seeing here is the benefits that might accrue to communities that have superchargers. For example, the most recent supercharger installation I am aware of happens to be down at the Three Bears on your way to Anchorage. And there are eight superchargers there. That means that if someone is coming up from, say, the Kenai or further north coming down, there's a place to stop. And my experience with superchargers is that they charge in a very quick way. So if you need to top off your electric vehicle, you can do it in 10 or 15 minutes, have a cup of coffee, stretch your legs, and go on. So I think that is something that is critical. I'm very happy that the state has provided the information, and we'll see what the borough does with it, other than saying, oh, well, thank you very much. Is there a place for the borough, or for that matter, the city of Palmer, the city of Wasilla, to be involved in extending something of what's being provided through private-public relationships.
Yeah, good suggestion. Yeah, it is a $53 million grant, a part of the infrastructure bill, a phased-in situation. But, perhaps we can get an interview with this Taylor Asher, who says she gives these presentations two or three a week, have her on the radio, because I think you have an interesting conversation with her, Mike.
Yep, look forward to it.
It was a electric night. Not a lot, but I do want to make note of this one. It was an ordinance repealing an electric generation and delivery facility ordinance that was put in place, probably as far back as, I want to say, 2007. And it had to do with the generation had to do with power plants. If we all remember back when the Aklutna power plant, which is just on the other side of the borough, when that was looking for a home, there was some concern where that was going to go and how it would conflict with the area that they wanted to put it in with what was already there. This ordinance came as a result of that, which put in a CIP process, which said it doesn't mean you can't have power plants in the borough. It just says that you have to go through a CIP process and a planning commission and also make sure that you hear from the public about how they feel about that going into their neighborhood. Well, Mr. Sumner doesn't think there should be this regulation, and he asked that this be put together to repeal it completely so there would be no CIP process anymore. It would just basically, if they wanted to build it, if they wanted to come into the area and build whatever it was, then so be it. I think I'm going to start a new thing, Mike, where we start out the best of the quotes. And his quote, and I don't know if he was kidding or not, is if I want to build a nuclear reactor in my backyard, I should be able to do that.
Oh.
I'm not sure his neighbors would agree with that. And there was some discussion about it. There was actually pointed out that no utility had asked for this. It was something that was just being brought to the table by one assembly person. There were three testimonies by phone against it. And Ms. Naur certainly gave it her best shot of saying, hey, we don't want to, do away with the public process here. But at the end of the day, it was repealed. And so that particular ordinance is now gone. It was the only two, Mr. Hale and Ms. Nowers, who are in the minority, voted against it, said we should have some public process. And even if it does mean you want a reactor, there should be a public process, but it is what it is. So we'll see what happens there. I think that's going to get some news.
Of course, the real question is, having done that, since you've indicated there really wasn't someone standing on the sidelines, or as far as we know, ready to start up their nuclear reactor in their basement. So, yeah.
Well, that's kind of the nature of land conflicts, right? Everybody wants a cell tower until your neighbor puts a cell tower in, and then they want to know where the government is there to regulate. So we'll see. I mean, I think to be fair with this, and this may have been sort of a safe issue for Mr. Sumner, even though it seems a little controversial, we're pretty much power overgenerated here. So the likelihood of another power company wanting to start up is maybe not so much, but we'll see. We'll see how that all rolls out. They also took up the mandatory land use ordinance, too. He wanted to repeal that. They did postpone that till December 8th. So we'll have more to talk about that. So a couple other ones, but we'll have plenty of time next week to circle back to some things, Mike.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Done by 9:30.
Yeah, great. A pretty quick meeting then. Well, what we're going to do next is we're going to take the results of Wednesday's report from the state, which is the ranked choice voting report that has determined just who's going where. And we're going to talk about that next.
Sounds great.
Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. And we have someone on the line who's going to assist with the summary of the results of the ranked choice voting that happened and was summarized on Wednesday, the 23rd of November.
Lee Henriksen here with Mike. Yeah, the tabulation occurred for 12 races in the Alaska voting process that were not decided with the 50% plus one majority with the election of November 8th and all the absentee ballots and such that got counted later.
Got it. First of all, you and I had, as many, I think, listeners probably did, the experience of watching the live presentation. And I, for one, was very impressed that in about 30 minutes, the director of elections was able to walk through and show each one with some detail. What was your impression about that process?
Yeah, Gail Venumiai did a great job of presenting the data and going through it. And it was easy to watch and see. You could see the numbers on the screen. So it was very well done. Gavel to Gavel did the video streaming for them. And she did point out at the beginning that everything in the room where she was doing the work and presentation was not connected to the internet.
Right, right. Totally separate.
Mm-hmm. And 12 races were decided by the ranked choice tabulation process, which was fascinating to watch, starting, of course, with our U.S. senator.
Yes, indeed, because if people had been following the lead-up to this final tabulation, they knew that initially it appeared that the Republican Kelly Tsubaka was in the lead, and then as time went on and more votes were counted in the ordinary voting process, Lisa Murkowski went into the lead by a few thousand.
Right, and so then we have four candidates, so then they had ranked choice voting. Buzz Kelly was the lowest vote getter. He had about a little over 3% of the vote. So his votes got redistributed among the remaining candidates. And there were about a little over 8,500 votes. And what I found interesting is how many people didn't vote a second choice at all, which was almost 2,800 of those 8,500 ballots were just no one. They didn't bother voting.
Right.
Kelly Tsubaka got the majority of them at 3,200 and et cetera. But it wasn't enough to put her over the top. So then the next up on the round two of the ranked choice, Pat Chesbrough had the lowest number of votes remaining, which was a little over 29,000 votes. So those got redistributed among the remaining two candidates, Lisa Murkowski and Kelly Tsubaka. And that was enough to put Lisa over the top easily.
Right.
Of those 29,000 plus votes for Pat Chesbrough, over 20,000 of them went to Lisa Murkowski, and 2,200 went to Kelly, and 6,200 plus didn't get counted at all. They call it exhausted, and then they have overvotes, which I assume means someone voted for Pat for the second choice, which, you know, doesn't get counted. So Lisa ended up with 53.69% of the vote,
right,
easily winning.
And before we go on to some of the other detail, point out that listeners who had watched, they may have noted that this made a big difference depending upon the race, whether the same party person came in third, and that set of votes was not allocated to the same party person, for example. You notice that it wasn't always a case where people were choosing second votes. There were some areas of the state and races where people just said no, then didn't do any of that.
Right, right, right. So I think, you know, our limited amount of time, the other race I want to talk about, if it's okay with you, is
sure.
U.S. House seat 28,
right,
which is over in the Wasilla area, had four Republican candidates running. None of the four had a majority, had the 50% plus one, although Jesse Sumner was in the lead with a little over 30% of the vote. So four Republican candidates. So Jessica Wright was a low vote getter. Her 859 votes got kicked out, and they got redistributed per her second choice. Of those 859, 310 of them were exhausted, which means no one chose a second candidate. And then the rest were distributed among the other three remaining candidates, Rachel Allen, Jesse Sumner, and Steve Menard. So again, not a majority. So Rachel Allen was the low vote, had the lowest number of votes. So her 1,480 votes were redistributed again among Jesse Sumner and Steve Menard. And Jesse got 699 of them. Steve got 210 of them. 570 were exhausted, which means those 570 people didn't do a third choice.
Right.
And so Jesse Sumner was the winner with 61.82% of the vote. So it was just fascinating to look at.
Right.
And there were a few upsets, you know, where people who were in second place jumped to first place.
But one of the things in the time we have remaining that a number of observers are noting is that, for example, I think five people are going to the legislature who are not supported. They're Republicans that were not supported by the Republican Party here in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very interesting. And then there were also, I want to mention that there were three candidates who were successful, who are going to the legislature, who are LGBTQ candidates, or I would have to say are clearly dressing their sexual preference before they ran.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time that has happened at all. And to have three seems to be a significant statement from different parts of the state.
Right. Yeah. And the other little interesting factoid about this is in the House, there may be challenges to two of the people who won, the challenges to David Eastman's eligibility because of his member in Oathkeepers, and to Armstrong's eligibility because did she live here long enough?
Right.
And so there'll be a suit filed about her after the election is certified. The suit was filed during the election, and the judge threw it out saying it's before or after, it's not during.
Got it.
And Eastman's is ongoing.
And so that leads us to say that at this moment in time, what it appears is the Senate is pretty much on its way to a coalition, which might be including most of the 9 D's that have been elected to the Senate in some form of coalition. The House is much more foggy. It appears to be a roughly 20-20 split.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. You know, 20 Republicans, 19 Democrats, and David Eastman.
Right. Right. And of course, we have to tip our hat to Mary Pattola, who's going to the U.S. House. She relatively easily moved on to the House, and the governor was reelected as well. Not quite that easily, just barely above 50%.
Well, I would say that easily because he didn't have to go through ranked choice.
Got it.
He won outright.
Got it. On the first balloting, he got just over 50%, and that kept him out of the ranked choice voting business.
Process, yeah. Okay.
So let's just summarize by saying we watched it unfold from before the election day. We watched it unfold as ranked choice voting was being played out. What was your general impression overall about the whole process?
I think the whole process meant that Alaskans got to choose the candidates they wanted rather than being forced to choose among candidates that the parties wanted. So I think it's a win for Alaska. And I think people are still learning about ranked choice voting. As you look at the data, you'll see that those second votes can really matter in the ranked choice voting and sometimes even the third vote. So I think we'll see more people encouraging, like, you know, vote your second and third. Don't leave them blank.
Got it.
Future elections.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I would agree. Well, thank you, Lee Henderson, for sitting in to finishing off this edition of Valley Edition. Stay well. And of course, we'll be looking forward to the rest of the story as both the legislature in the House and the Senate organize. And we have the result. There's one place out there with a 4-vote margin that might be enjoying a recount, and follow up later.
Okay, very good. Goodbye, Mike.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.